Okay, first of all, I'm wearing this T-shirt because Peter pressured me into buying it. His former career as a T-shirt salesman in MSRI. So I figured this is the one time I had to wear it. Another thing I've said this to Dick Randall, but I wanted to argue with him about his dates. He said Peter gave up doing transformation groups in 1976 after an Amherst conference. It might have been 76, but I remember the first conference I ever went to before I was even a graduate student was Amherst conference and transformation groups, and that was 71. And that was one of my first, I don't know if I talked to you then, but in the introduction to that book, the lecture book, it says lectures on Breeze-Scorn varieties were given by Davis and Orlick. And I was so proud of that, to have my name mentioned with a real mathematician, which was great. But first time that ever happened. So we didn't know whether it was retirement or birthday, but I just put something up there. Let me, back to this title. Some of you, I've given talks on this same title before for several years, I think. But in fact, this is the first time I've given a talk where I've had a correct proof. So this is really the first time I've talked on it. And it's not really on arrangements, but it is on cohomology, and it does have something to do with reflection groups. So it's vaguely in the spirit of this field. I'm going to be talking about buildings, and I think, you know, most people, they've heard descriptions of buildings as being something like a tree. It's some sort of a simplicial complex. In fact, I don't want to think about that, think of it exactly this way in this talk. A building, I'm going to give some examples, but a building is basically some type of combinatorial object. One thing it's associated to a Coxeter system, which can be arbitrary. It doesn't have to be a finite Coxeter group or an affine Coxeter group. And what a building is it's basically just a set of things that you're going to call chambers, and a way to say when two chambers are adjacent. So it's in a family of equivalence relations indexed by some set. There's S different, we're indexed by the set of fundamental generators for the Coxeter group. So there's different types of adjacency. And then there's some W-valued or Weyl-valued distance function, which is a map from like that, which I'll say something more about when I'll repeat this definition. And classically, one is only, I mean, in the case for algebraic groups or groups over local fields, over the p-adics, one's only interested in the case of finite reflection groups or co-compact Euclidean reflection groups. But in reality, there's a lot of other buildings associated to Katz Moody groups, for example, and just which you can also just make not associated to Katz Moody groups, but there are a lot of other, and they lead to interesting spaces with group actions on them. Now we want to, and so that, so the building has this just combinatorial aspect to it, but we want to associate a space to it. And roughly the way we have to do that, there's some freedom of choice to do that. What we have to do is we have to choose a space to be every one of our chambers should be homeomorphic to some space X. And in fact, we're going to need to make different choices. And so you need a space which is supposed to be a model chamber and a family of subspaces, X sub S indexed by this set S of generators, which I call a mere structure. And then we have this set of abstract set, and we paste together one copy of the chamber for each set. So in other words, I don't know, you know, if X is just an interval like that with, say, two endpoints, and if the set was the infinite dihedral group, you'd paste them together and you'd end up with a line. If the set was something more complicated, where you had, say, two things adjacent to every chamber, you could end up with a tree, okay? And if you did the same thing with some other space in there for X, you'd end up with something else, even with the same building. And I'm eventually going to use the X upper F to be the set of points of X which have locally finite neighborhoods. I'll give a different definition of that, but okay, now there's two basic choices of what this fundamental of this model chamber should be. The first is the classical choice is to take X to be a simplex with its codimension 1 faces indexed by S. And this was the original choice that Pitts used, and I'm going to call this the classical realization of the building phi. And the other choice is one which, there's more than one choice, but the other choice which I like to use is to take the realization of the poset of spherical subsets of S. A spherical subset means it's going to generate a finite Coxeter group. I'll say that again in a minute too. But so in other words, and in this case, this delta upper F is going to be the simplex with the faces which correspond to infinite Coxeter subgroups discarded. So it's going to be a simplex with possibly some faces discarded, and K is going to be the compact core that retracts back down onto. So it's the fact that it's a subset of the barycentric subdivision of a simplex. And I'll call this the standard realization. So let me say a few words. All three of these come out to be contractible. The first two are built to be locally finite, at least if we're talking about a building of finite thickness, where we only have a finite number of things adjacent to a given chamber. Then the first two are always going to be locally finite, and the third won't be, if some of its faces aren't spherical. Okay, so that's. Now the one that matters in geometric group theory is not when X is equal to the simplex, but when it's this subset of the simplex. Maybe I should just kill time. I mean, you might think, it might be that your Coxeter group, you might think of it as, say, being something like a ideal triangle in the plane, in the hyperbolic plane. So in fact, where corresponding to the free product of three copies of Z2 or something. So the simplex, the one fundamental chamber would be the triangle, and the fundamental chamber I would use would just be those three line segments. Okay. And the reason is if we had say a co-compact lattice in the group of automorphisms of this, then you can identify the compactly supported cohomology of this realization of the building with cohomology of the group with group ring coefficients. And this is a thing which is important in geometric group theory. For example, it tells us the virtual cohomologic, the top dimension of this is the virtual cohomological dimension of this. You can tell whether you have a duality group or read off the number of ends. So this tells us a lot of information about the cohomology of a group with group ring coefficients tells us a lot. So that's why I'm interested in knowing this. Now, in fact, this is the answer in the case of an irreducible affine building, which is when K is equal to the simplex, which includes the case where K is equal to the simplex. This was done, the calculation was done by Burrell and Serre in a paper in topology in 1976. And the answer, sort of what you would expect, It's that the compactly supported cohomology is free abelian and it's concentrated in the top degree, meaning the dimension of the simplex. Okay? And this was a result that they used to get cohomological properties of S-arithmetic groups. And so the result I want to do is a complete calculation of this for any building and any space X, or at least the finite faces in it, the non-spherical faces. The case where X equals K is the case of interest again. But it turns out that that's the result I'm interested in when X is equal to K. I can do it for any X, but it turns out to do it for any X, the first step I really need to do is to do it for a simplex, or at least for a simplex with the infinite faces thrown away. And the result for this case, so see here, this is, the point here is the quotient space is not compact, so there's some non-compactness coming just from the missing faces in the simplex. Okay? And the result is, I think, makes sense intuitively. It's just that you get the same answer as Borel Serre did, that you get a free abelian group concentrated in the top degree, which isn't the answer I'm going to get when X is equal to K. Okay? But this is somehow, I need to prove this step separately for the argument to work. So, in contrast, this thing will depend on what the Coxeter group is. It's going to be spread all over the place. It won't be in the top degree. Okay, so here I just wrote down some history of the mistakes, I guess. So basically, in the case if the building was just a Coxeter system, I did this calculation in a 1998 paper, and that basically suggests what the answer should be. I haven't said what the answer is yet, but we'll get to that. And in 2002, John Meyer and I wrote a paper where we said we reproved this theorem, and we said we had the general proof for WS, but we made a mistake in the proof. And then with these collaborators, Jan Demaro, Tadeusz Januszkiewicz, and Boris Okin, we gave a version of this which showed what the W module structure was on the compactly supported cohomology or compact group for Coxeter groups. And we also gave a proof that worked in general for right angled buildings, but we couldn't do it in general. And this paper, which is joint work with these three guys and this guy, is does it in general. Here I listed I just listed some random references. One, I wanted to advertise my book, but here, the book on buildings done in the way that I'm talking about in this combinatorial way is by this book by Mark Ronan, and it's also in this new book, new rewrite of Ken Brown's book with Abramenko. They have both the simplicial complex way and this combinatorial way. And this is my book on Coxeter groups, which has a lot of what I'm talking about in it. Here's the reference to the Borel Serre paper. This paper by Brady, McCammon, and Meyer is one that I need to use in the proof. I'll say when I get to that. These are the two papers I talked. This is the paper where I calculated the cohomology for the Coxeter group. And this is one of the key ideas comes from this L2 cohomology paper. This is the new paper. This is a paper where there's a mistake in it, and this paper I also need in the proof, this paper by Demar and Ospeda. Okay, so that was the introduction in history. Now let me move on to repeat. I think I'm partially going to repeat part of what I said before. But so this is the modern definition of buildings goes along something like this. It doesn't start talking about simplicial complex. It starts like this. It says a chamber system just means a set with some set of with a family of equivalence relations on it indexed by a set S. And you say two chambers are, say, S adjacent if they're equivalent, S equivalent but not equal. A gallery means a finite sequence of adjacent chambers. Once you have a gallery, two adjacent chambers have a type of adjacency, so you have a word describing their adjacency, and so you get a word in S. Since S is going to be generated from a Coxeter group, that's going to tell you how to get an element in the Coxeter group. And you say the building is connected if two chambers can be connected by a gallery. If you have a subset of this set S, and each of the adjacencies is in this subset, then you say you have a T gallery. For example, in this case, if the vertices were labeled by S and T, a T gallery would mean two chambers that intersected on a vertex of type S. And a residue is a connected component where you restrict it to these T galleries, the galleries in this subset. So it's a residue of type T. Here's the standard definition of a Coxeter group. You're given a set, you're given any symmetric matrix with ones on the diagonal and off-diagonal entries, either integers bigger than or equal to 2 or the symbol infinity. And from that, you get a presentation of a group with these are the relations. S is a set of generators, and these are the relations. And, of course, the fact that you have SS to the 1 equals 1 says that each S has order 2. And the pair is called a Coxeter system. And I'm going to use this notation. W sub T means the subgroup generated by T. And W sub S, that's a little s, is a subgroup generated by one of these elements, a group of order 2. So here's an example. The Coxeter group itself is a chamber system. You say that two elements in the Coxeter group are equivalent if they belong to the same coset of W sub S, or S equivalent. So basically two things are equivalent if they're connected by a edge in the Cayley graph, and a gallery just means a path in the Cayley graph. And each edge has a label, so the type of that path, you read off the labels on the edges, and that gives you the word in S. And a T residue in this case just corresponds to a coset of the subset of the subgroup generated by T. So that's one way to, so this is a so-called thin building. A word I'm going to use over and over again is that I'll say a subset of this generating set is spherical if it generates a finite Coxeter group. And I'm going to use script S to mean the poset of spherical subsets, just ordered by inclusion, including the empty set. And now here's the official definition of a building, repeated again. I wonder how far I am. Okay. So it's this set of chambers, the family of equivalence relations indexed by S. Maybe each S equivalence class has to have at least two elements. We can't just end. And it has this W value distance function. And the main definition of that is, I call them phi here instead of C. But two chambers are connected by a minimal gallery, the shortest gallery of type S1 through SN, if and only if their W distance is what you get when you write that out as a word in the Coxeter group. This last thing in parentheses has a lot of juice in it, and it's, so it says the W distance is basically, you look at a shortest gallery between them that gives you a word in the Coxeter group, and it says if you have any expression for any other expression, which is the shortest word, there's a gallery of that type connecting the two. That's the basic fact for a building. That implies all these things. So, for example, as I said, the group itself is the building. This is the same definition we had before, and the W distance is just defined by the distance between W and W prime is W inverse W prime. And a T residue, again, just becomes a coset of WT. Just repeated that. So there are different ways to associate a topological space. So as I say, a mere structure means I have a CW complex family of subcomplexes. The family of subcomplexes I'm calling the mere structure. If I have a point in this chamber, this putative chamber X, let S of X be the set of subcomplexes to which it, the set of indices of subcomplexes to which it belongs. And then you define this space U phi of X to be, you give phi the discrete topology, take its product with X, and then glue them together. You divide by this equivalence relation. So the equivalence relation is you identify two things if and only if the points are the same and the chambers, these abstract chambers, belong to the same S of X residue. If you think, so that's a standard construction. And the classical case, as I said, is the case due to Titz, where we use delta as a simplex, called the classical realization. And the standard realization, this is just a repeat, actually, is where you take K to be the poset of all spherical subsets of S, meaning the subsets which generate finite Coxeter groups. And then that you can think of this geometric realization as a subset of the barycentric subdivision, and you define the case of S as the way you did before, and this is called the standard realization. Okay. Here's another little example. This is the sort of the basic example of a building. This is what I started to draw here. If you have a tree without terminal vertices, so an infinite tree, then it's bipartite. You can color the vertices by two colors, S and T. You can let W be the infinite dihedral group with these two generators. And now, to go backwards, this is the usual picture of a building, but to go backwards, you just think of phi as being the abstract set of edges, and you call two of them adjacent when they're adjacent, and they have a type of adjacency. And the W distance is just what we said before, that you take a minimal path between two edges, and that gives you a word in these STs. And if you decide to, this part is just combinatorial, and if you let K be an interval or delta be a one simplex, you just recover the original tree. Here's another picture I like. I put this on the cover of my book, of the pentagonal covering of a hyperbolic plane. So if you had the Coxeter group generated by reflection, right angle Coxeter group generated by reflections across the edges of a pentagon, and you let the building, you looked at the thin building just corresponding to that Coxeter group, you get this usual tessellation. Now, if you had a building of more complicated, with a more general building would be, you could imagine that you have, off of each of these edges, you have more than two pentagons branching, some fashion. And the difference between this and the classical realization was, if you took this same Coxeter group, the classical realization would be to realize that by a simplex with five faces, in other words, by a four-dimensional simplex, okay, instead of this two-dimensional thing. So this is just some notation. I'm going to let X lower T mean the intersection of these faces correspond in the subset T, and X upper T or X upper U to be the union. And I'm going to let X upper F mean the complement of the spherical faces of X, the faces X sub T, where T generates a finite subgroup. So that's the same as I'm talking about before. Okay. So I still have 15 minutes left. I'm doing okay. Okay, so now I want to at least state the main theorem. So to state that, I need a little bit more notation. Again, phi is this building of a general building. And I'm going to let A be the set of finitely supported integer value functions on phi. In other words, it's just the free abelian group on a set of chambers. And now an important thing, for each subset of T, I let A upper T be the set of functions which are constant on every T residue. Okay? So in fact, the T residues, you can either think of them as a union of chambers containing a given face in the chamber, or you can just think of it as a face in the chamber. So in fact, these are sort of functions, basically they correspond to functions which are constant on faces. And I should note that A upper T is zero whenever T is not spherical. That's because if T is not spherical, then there's an infinite number of things in every T residue. And I'm looking at finitely supported functions. When we take the example we're talking about where phi is just the Coxeter group itself, then A is just the, can be thought of as the group ring, and A upper T is the stuff which is invariant by, say, the right action of WT on the group ring, or in other words, it's the set of functions on the cosets, W mod W2. So here's some more notation. So remember, this A upper T is the stuff which is constant on T residues. And if you take a bigger set U, then that's requiring it to be constant on bigger sets. So A upper U is contained in there. And I'm going to let A greater than T being the submod, the subgroup or submodule spanned by all the things which are strictly contained T, okay? And a fact which comes out of the proof, but I'll just say it, is this quotient is free abelian, because I want to state the theorem. And let me let A hat upper T be some complementary summand for this. And here's the main theorem. Here's the main computation. It says this thing we're interested in, it's just this set over, it's a finite sum over just the subsets which generate finite subgroups. And there's many copies of it, but this term right here is just the relative cohomology of a chamber, comma, this union of walls, if you like, of the chamber, indexed by the sort of things which are in the complement of that. So in other words, if the fundamental chamber was something like a pentagon, you would get terms when T was equal to the empty set, you would get a term that would look like this pentagon comma the whole boundary, which would definitely have something in dimension 2. And then the other terms, in fact, you wouldn't get anything, because if T was equal to a one element set, you would be taking the pentagon complement comma the complement of an edge in the boundary, which is contractible. And if it was a two element set, you'd be taking a pentagon complement of the complement of two edges, which would be three edges in a row. That would also be contractible. So in fact, in that case, you would only get one term here, one non-zero term, and then tensor this infinitely generated free abelian group usually. Now, and so in fact, if X is the K that we're interested in, like there, then this X is contractible and this relative thing is easy to understand what it is. So in fact, this is an actual easy to figure out answer. And in general, the boundary of one of these chambers, the way I've drawn it, can be any simplicial complex. It can be any manifold, for example. Any closed manifold. So this stuff can be spread out all over the place. I should have written this down with a K in there instead, but I did it this way. Okay, now here's, I want to start indicating how the proof goes. So, I want to define what I mean by sort of a some sort of coefficient system on this chamber X, which is what you're led to if you were thinking about. I mean, it's not a locally trivial coefficient system. It's some sort of, it varies over the type of the cells. But what I mean by the cochains on here would just be the functions on a set of K cells whose value is in these things which are constant on. So that the value on a K cell is constant on all the chambers containing that cell. Okay. If you like, it's just sort of the usual thing you would do in group theory. This just means the product over all cells of these SOCs or something overall. And then it's easy to see, since these A upper T's are zero when T is not spherical, it's easy to see that, okay, I forgot, the cohomology of that chain complex I wrote down, I'm using this script H. I think I should have said that. I forgot to say that. So this means the cohomology of this chain complex right there. And it's easy to see that cohomology those kind of coefficients is really just the cohomology of the building that we're interested in, where you throw away the non-spherical faces. That's nothing. That's a direct identification. So now the overall strategy for proving this theorem, the rough strategy is that we're going to prove a decomposition theorem for this coefficient system. And each of the pieces is going to directly be identifiable with the cohomology of each of the pieces will come out to be one of the pieces in the sum and by a direct decomposition. So the main work here is to prove the right kind of decomposition theorem for this coefficient system. And once you do that, it's easy to directly see that you just have the ordinary cellular chains that we're calculating. So this is what the decomposition theorem says. It says that if you take any one of these spherical subsets, meaning it generates a finite group, the things which are constant on T residues is a direct sum over this. So this includes. This means that you take A hat upper T, and then all the stuff bigger than that, you divide that up the way you should. Okay, so it's the obvious thing to guess the way it should break up, but it's not obvious to prove it. So in particular, it says that this A, which corresponds to T equals the empty set, should break up as a direct sum of these free abelian of these subgroups. Now this is, in the earlier paper with my three other co-authors, you know, we proved this for Coxeter groups. The obvious way to prove this would basically just be to give a basis for this free abelian group where the various terms lay in those subthings. And that's how we proved it for Coxeter groups. But that's not how we prove it here. So to prove this, you're basically, you're led back to the situation, to proving something about the situation where you have, where you don't have, where X isn't what we're interested in, but X is the full simplex. And you can sort of see this. So if we're trying to now compute the cohomology of the simplex with coefficients in this weird coefficient system, if you think about, for example, what the top dimensional cochains look like. So they look like A, which is really A empty set. And then the things mapping into that are the A's generated by, this is the N chains or something, this is generated by all the T's, which are one less than maximal or something. One less than the whole thing. And so in fact, the image, the top cohomology of this is going to be this A divided by all the stuff coming from stuff bigger. Okay? And it's easy to see that if you did have this decomposition stating that all the cohomology was concentrated in the top dimension and then it was zero, it would imply that all the cohomology was concentrated in the top dimension and all the lower stuff vanished. And basically, if you know this cohomological statement, and, well, as I said, and you also need a statement for various faces of delta T, for subcomplexes corresponding to that, then you can take this cohomological statement and change it back into this direct sum statement. So that's the strategy of the proof, was to make this cohomological statement here. So here I have so first of all, why is this a plausible statement? Well, why is it? It's sort of obvious in the case of just the Coxeter group, because in that case, there's this well-known picture of the Titz cone of the Coxeter group has this linear representation. It acts properly, discontinuously with finite stabilizers on the interior of this cone. And at least the image of this cone in projective space can be identified with this space, W delta F. And the image of that cone in projective space is an open disk. So it's homeomorphic to Rn. In other words, this is saying that the chambers where this is the chain, where the apartments where this is the, where this delta F is the chamber are Rn. So it makes sense that the compactly supported cohomology should be in the top. That's why it's plausible. Now, in fact, let me just say a few words about the proof. So, in fact, this is where I made several mistakes in proving this over the last year, okay? Thinking it was just obvious to go from that statement I just said to the statement for buildings. And eventually, this is, we came up with a right proof. And the right proof is to say that this building where I use this simplex with the missing faces, it has a piecewise Euclidean cat zero metric. Now, in fact, it's a famous result about the buildings or Coxeter groups that when you use this compact thing, K, there's a polyhedral metric which is cat zero. Cat zero means that it's non-positively curved, and it means basically that there's a unique geodesic between any two points. That's the key thing that you need. And the distance function is compact. So maybe just to draw a quick picture, if I had a case where I had the fundamental chamber, I had two finite faces here and say one missing infinite face, then the usual K would be say this piece together with this piece, and that would be it. And the way we would put the piecewise Euclidean metric on it, say there's an angle here of pi over n, is we would just make each of these pieces Euclidean quadrilaterals with angles pi over n, pi over 2, and the remaining angle there. And then we would just leave this stuff out. And now the way this is proved is basically, the idea is that these extra faces, like this edge, you just cross it with, take the product with zero infinity. And that works. Well, I should have known this years ago, but I never knew it until a few months ago. So that's one ingredient. This is the an interesting step, which I should have realized a long time ago. And then there's a theorem by Brady, McCammon, and Meyer, which uses the type of discrete Morse theory that Salvetti was talking about today. And basically, the idea is if you, once you have this cat zero metric on it, you can look at distance from a point, and then you want to prove that spheres of larger and larger radius are connected up to the top dimension. And so they prove that this, that you always get this, provided that you know that the complements of balls, open balls of radius pi over 2 in the links of cells are highly connected, sufficiently highly connected, depending. That's what the main theorem of that paper that I quoted to there says, and then the theorem of Damara and Esueda, and independently in somebody's thesis in Germany, says that in spherical buildings this is true, and the links even in this delta F are these spherical buildings. So it's putting together those three ingredients, you get it. Okay, so just to repeat what I just said, this is the last slide. So in other words, the outline of this argument was, by knowing that this was cat zero, the fact that we knew that this was cat zero where the fundamental chamber was this simplex, so I left out the C for compactly supported, meant that this was free abelian and concentrated in the top dimension, and then with a little more work, that proved that this coefficient system decomposed into sort of coefficient systems for these A hat upper T's, and then that decomposition of this coefficient system basically gave the main theorem that the cohomology of the things that it, the homology of, once we took the homology, once we decomposed the coefficient system, it was obvious that we get the main theorem. Okay, so that's all I have.
Compute the homology